Welcome back to Dirty Water News in the Sack with Dr. Sarah. We have today Ashley Madison CEO Noel Biderman. How are you today?
I'm great, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you back. We had a little snafu in our last interview, and a lot of people missed out on a lot of awesome information, so that was disappointing.
That happens. We'll recover. We'll live.
Yeah. You're a good sport about coming back. I really appreciate it. So let's talk about Ashley Madison. And back in 2001, you developed Ashley Madison. And what was the concept behind that?
Well, the concept was really twofold. One was the recognition that, you know, online dating was becoming the centerpiece of a lot of internet traffic, but yet it suffered from a fatal flaw. It was very tempting to pose as something you weren't, which was single and available. It turns out that married people were using singles dating sites to get what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably a dysfunctional form of connection, right? If you're going to be in an affair, I would think that you'd want to be in it with somebody who wants to be in it. And so Ashley Madison was both the response to that behavior pattern, and second, maybe even more importantly, it was a response to a change in societal perceptions, at least on the female side of the equation, around non-monogamous behavior. Women had started to become more and more unfaithful as they had started to earn in power to their male counterparts, be as educated, and have some interesting experiences. And so the bet was that the internet was going to level that playing field even further.
And it absolutely did. I mean, there was a lot of people on Match.com, still are, and OkCupid that are, a lot of women I find that are still single are finding that a lot of the men are married or vice versa.
Yeah, and it gets confusing as new apps go onto the market. You know, a Tinder app, it just shows a photo and doesn't really ask a lot of questions. And so now you really are gambling. Like, you know, like, is that person on the other end of that app in a relationship, or are they single? And what's in it for me? And I think that, you know, it becomes popular, but quickly lose its traction if people on the other end of it, in particular females, but even sometimes males, find that the person on the other end is not at all what they kind of hold themselves out to be.
Right. And unlike Tinder, yours is more, it's much more safe to come on Ashley Madison, I would think. It's a better environment to have something like this occur. I mean, Tinder,
well, it's certainly much more discreet, right? To us, the perfect affair is both meeting someone of like-mindedness, so somebody who's also interested in an affair, and B, not being discovered. And so, yes, publishing your photo for the whole world to see is probably not the best choice. So our photo kind of private upload feature is one of those ways. You know, communications that stay on our platform are probably more preferred than sending it to your cell phone or, you know, to your personal email address. And even the way we kind of delete a profile on Ashley Madison, which is, you know, we call it a ghost delete. We make it like you were never there. We recall all the messages you sent, the photos you shared. Even that is probably different and unique than any other dating service on the planet. So yes, us, you know, having the community where everybody knows what they're getting into is probably half the battle, and the other half is the technology we have devised.
That's funny that you say that. I was doing Boston Herald Radio, is one of our bigger newspapers here in the Boston area. I was on there this morning, and I was talking about how I was going to talk to you today. And a couple of them had questions about that. They were afraid, they wanted to know, like, with the cloud, will their information be saved on the cloud and then get out there? That was one of their questions.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and it's a fair question, especially in this day and age. But instead, what I've done is kind of a couple of unique things. You know, we have built a bunker hidden away, way away from prying eyes, where I won't even disclose it, and it's our own private servers. And so, no, there is no cloud capability. You know, every piece of information is either anonymous or encrypted. And I think that it's kind of important to look at it from that perspective, right? I think that
absolutely,
there is a whole bunch of service. Yeah, there is a whole bunch of services out there where people have trepidation around adoption because, hey, I don't know where this is going to be. But every single day we kind of wake up and go to bed thinking about it. And,
right.
You know, that's how we've approached it.
Right. Especially like the celebrities and all their pictures got out. But I will let our viewers know that I think Noel is very, very experienced in this, and he's no rookie to this situation. So I truly, truly would go with it. You know, there's so many other websites out there that are sketchy. So they do know what they're doing over there.
I wouldn't personally advise anyone. I would never advise or not advise someone to have an affair. That's their prerogative. But I certainly would advise someone who's having an affair to do it in risky environments. And that can be as risky as the workplace, where the secret is bound to get out. So that's fraught with risk.
People like to gossip.
and certainly some fly-by-night organization, right? Like, to me, anybody without a pedigree in the history and without, you know, real sustainability, why would I want my data sitting with them? That seems to me to be a really risky endeavor.
Yeah, it definitely does. Speaking of that, you spoke about infidelity, and there's so much. What leads people, do you think, to want to cheat, especially when they're married?
You know, I think that the common line everybody hears is just that we're not engineered for it, right? That monogamy ultimately is a man-made construct based on economic needs and sometimes religious and historic needs, and not necessarily anything based on great social science. And I think that is an element of it, but I think it goes even deeper than that. I think that if you, as we have done, do the research, and we've worked with, you know, the University of California, Duke, MIT, NYU, there's really no institution in America that's studying sex, monogamy, or unfaithfulness that hasn't at some point asked to access our big data, right? We sign up 30,000 people a day.
That's crazy.
Self-published while they're having an affair, at the genesis of their affair. They send 1.6 million communications a day. So it's really robust data in that sense. And, you know, I think for women, this comes down to a very important psychographic. You know, at some point in time, the happiest time in their romantic lives is when they were an object of desire. And now it can be 2 years into a marriage, 12 years into a marriage, or 22 years into a marriage. For that to have evaporated, to be non-existent, that's really painful for them. And so they are looking to rekindle being that object of desire. And that can really happen for them in an affair. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel healthy. It makes them less stressed at work or with their kids or even with their own partner. It's the shot in the arm that they need to kind of rejuvenate their persona. And so you can, if you want, look at those people and say, oh, how could they? Or you can be more understanding of that psychographic and understand, okay, well, listen, being lonely is painful. Being lonely within a marriage is twice as painful.
Right.
And that's what they're trying to eradicate. And I think for men, this is ultimately about sexual voids. That can be that they're literally in sexless marriages. I think 20 million American couples describe themselves as that. They have sex less than, three times a year. Or it can just be appetite. You know, it can be that the kind of sex you're having is very vanilla, very mundane. You're cohabitating with the same person for a long time. And so different sexual positions, different people of different backgrounds, ethnicity or body types, those are all things that they crave. And so at some point, the temptation becomes really strong and they're really unhappy not being able to pursue that.
Exactly. We actually talked about this morning, too. Millennials are more open to this. A lot of, you know, it's coming to fruition. People are starting to talk about swinging and, you know, different lifestyles and how they really like the person they're with. It's kind of, you know, you're giving them an alternative to a divorce. They like their partner, but maybe the sex isn't that good, but that's who they want to be with. Would you say that that's probably the common thing, especially, I think, with this upcoming group of millennials, especially?
You know, it's been fascinating. Over the years, one of the biggest defenses I've had to kind of foster in regards to Ashley Madison is that we're not a marriage wrecking service. We're a home preservation service. And really, ultimately, people
like that.
They want to stay married. Yeah, to them, marriage is about raising kids, shared economics, building a home, an extended family. There's all kinds of fundamentals to it. Sex is important, for sure, but it's rarely at the top of the list. And so most people aren't prepared just to leave to get something on the side. They'd kind of like to have their cake and eat it too. They'd like to be fulfilled intimately, but they'd also like to stay in a family dynamic. And so I think that's why non-monogamous behavior occurs. And so really we see it as a service that allows all this non-monogamous behavior to occur so people can stay married. That's really what Ashley Madison is at its foundation.
Right. I mean, you've created quite a platform. You said 30,000 people sign up a day.
A day, and we are seeing more and more youthful people. You know, it's fascinating to see women who are only married 2 or 3 years joining the service. I think there's a real pragmatic reason behind that. You know, there's a marriage,
right,
and there's a marriage with children, and people start exploring that children component, you know, 2 or 3 years into their marriage. And I think many of these women are really wondering if they want to be tied to this person in their life for the rest of their lives. And so there's usually a pragmatic reason behind a lot of what we see, why 39-year-olds use the service more than 38-year-olds, or why Monday morning is the busiest time in our service week in, week out.
Really?
Like it's full of expectations. Yeah, full of expectations around intimacy and connections. And so when they don't happen again, you know, for the 30th weekend in a row, it's not an Ashley Madison TV commercial that tends to drive people to have an affair. You can't really convince a happy person to have an affair. It tends to be their life, and its complications lead them down that path.
It was gonna happen through different guests and divorce attorneys and everything like that. I always say, you know, I find that, you know, people who are 26 years old get married. They, you know, think they have to get married, and then they're not happy, and then they end up divorced. So, I mean, this is a better alternative. Saves money too.
Yeah, 50% of the marriages in America end after 8 years, right? So the institution of marriage isn't wildly successful. I don't care how you define success, but we get married less and less often now.
Right.
Later and later in life, many, I think almost 40% of children born in America now are born to single moms. And so the institution is clearly not living up to the promise, though it's a very strong narrative in society that tells you you should be married, you should be monogamous in that marriage.
Right.
But I do think this generation of millennials is seeing it differently.
They
and
do.
I think it's because they have different experiences. You know, my parents' generation, my mom in particular, never really had a relationship other than her marriage with my father.
Right.
You know, she didn't go to university and love and lose. She's never had a career and met interesting people. She hasn't had the financial independence. So you fast forward to the typical woman today that has all those experiences and all those outlets, her appetite to be unhappy in a marriage, I think, is greatly, greatly diminished. And so she's going to take more risk with it. She's going to take more chances. She's going to understand polyamory a little differently. And
right.
I think we are looking at a watershed time in our lives around the institution of marriage. Where it gets to, where my children will be with regards to marriage, or where, I'm not sure, but I certainly believe that it's in a metamorphosis state.
Right. I definitely agree. I myself am single, but, you know, and I stay that way for a reason, because I haven't found anybody I would be interested in starting, like, the institution of marriage or a life together with, because there's so many options out there.
But in a sense, that's a shame, right? Like, you might sit there and say, I think I could be a wonderful mother or parent, but
right.
I believe I want another person in my life to do that, to support me in that effort, to help bring the other gender balance or whatever it ends up being. And so what you end up finding is that it somehow has to be, oh, I need to find someone I can live the rest of my life with in a monogamous setting, and then I can foster a family. And maybe that's backwards. Maybe
right.
it's got to be, I could be an incredible parent. I could raise an incredible family. On the sex side, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that anybody can do that. So let's tackle that topic in parallel or separately. And I think we have it backwards. I think we believe that at its foundation, we have to be monogamous with someone our entire lives for it to equal success. And I think what open couples would tell you is that they're very successful raising their families. Their divorce rates are much lower than monogamous couples. They find a way to navigate those challenges together.
Right.
But the only thing that they've changed is monogamy, and it allows them to be more successful. And I think we have to take a long look at that and just, you know, see if we can learn anything from it.
And I have a couple, they actually are on Playboy Radio, Swing Time 69. They're probably the happiest couple I have ever seen. And that's because they have that open relationship. They're married. They love each other. They have a lot of fun. But they go out to events and, you know, everybody seems happier. And I think that's just a better, sometimes might be a better environment, you know, when everybody's happy.
Yeah, no, I think me too. I've spoken with those couples. I think they do seem really happy.
Yeah.
I think the challenge they have is they still feel very stigmatized, right? In the community.
Oh, they definitely do.
The coaching they want to do for your, you know, Pop Warner or, you know, Little League Baseball or the
people
PTA
are looking stuff, at them funny.
They really feel that if they're right, if their lifestyle is exposed, that they're not going to be welcome and all those kinds of things.
Right.
And that's the challenge. I think that's the challenge with whether it's people in open relationships or the non-monogamous. How often have we heard, oh, that person cheated? And instantly we think, well, that person's bad. That person's wrong. That person can't be trusted.
Right.
And I don't know that any of those things are accurate. I don't know that that is at all the case. There's, you know, a million intimate moments we don't know about in conversations we're not party to, and we're certainly
right.
not behind closed doors and in their bedrooms. And so to leap to those conclusions, I think we're doing ourselves some disservice.
Absolutely. I think that we need to, the society needs to be more open. That's why I'm saying I think the millennials are starting to see it that way, definitely. I did have a question.
Great societies are built on tolerance, and hopefully each generation
we'll get better
gets
at
more
it.
Tolerant, because we tend to look over our shoulders at our parents' behaviors and, like, think about how we used to treat kids born out of wedlock. We really, like, from the moment that child was born, treated them with such disrespect.
Right.
It was unbelievable. Like, they struggled in life. We look at that now and would say, oh my God, who would ever do that to a child? How is it that their fault or their consequence?
Mm-hmm.
We think that that's an abhorrent way to be. And so we don't do that as much anymore. In some societies, maybe they still do, but for the most part, we won't tolerate that. Same-sex couples, it's going slowly, but we are starting to say, that's their choice. Like, why are we, they don't affect you and I if
right.
we don't have to live our lives that way.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that impact? Why would we judge? Why would we be that way? So we're getting there. And so each generation takes a step towards tolerance. And yes, I think that last kind of taboo will be the non-monogamous, but we have to take that step.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I can't wait for it to, I just, as I'm doing these shows and trying to become the next Dr. Ruth, I'm seeing more and more openness. So it's really great to talk to different people like yourself about these kind of things. You're on my page about that whole topic. So that's why I like your website and everything else you're doing.
And it takes shows like yours and Dr. Ruth and others to help cement these notions. There have to be voices to it. Part of why I agreed to do these interviews, you know, I guess long ago, my wife has asked me, everyone's asked me, like, why aren't we just calling it a day? Why aren't you sitting on the beach and just enjoying it?
Which you could.
Right, but it hasn't been told yet. There aren't many voices out there in defense of the unfaithful, right? And
right.
I think that they need that voice, and I'm certainly sitting on top of a wealth of information where I can hopefully effectively speak on their behalf. So that's part of the journey. That's part of the legacy I will personally hopefully leave behind.
I hope so, too. I mean, people just don't... I've seen you in actually a couple other interviews. I've YouTubed them and stuff. People get really nasty to you, and I feel like it was Dr. Phil... And it was just like a bad environment, but man, you handled that so classy. You just stuck to your guns because you know this is realistic and people need to, you know, I'm tired of them being prudes. I run into roadblocks all the time because people are pretending they're prudes. And it's like, come on, you're having sex, so let's start talking about it. That's my thing.
Well, yeah, you know, part of why I'm able to be stoic in those things is because I actually do believe that I'm in possession of information that even the incredible Dr. Phil is just not in possession of, you know. He just doesn't know. He just doesn't realize how prevalent this is, how, you know, the only thing you can really say about the non-monogamous is that they're non-monogamous. They are the most successful people among us. They're your best friends. They're your school teachers.
Right.
Bus drivers, it really is everybody. And there's no reason to judge the person. And so, yes, you know, you would think somebody in his line of work who is supposed to help people and why wouldn't become that kind of judgmental and people,
right.
But you know, people also pander. They pander to their audience or they pander to the noise. And I've been that, you know, whether it was on his show or The View, I had the same experience.
Oh, yep, I saw The View as well.
Four women who should have diverse opinions and thoughts, and yet it seemed to be one opinion and one thought. And even sitting there hearing Barbara Walters criticize me and trying to, you know, criticize my wife, and here I find out later after that interview that she herself has had an affair with a married man. Like, now you're just pot calling the kettle black, right?
Exactly.
So,
oh, yeah. That's so two-faced. We don't like that. You know, and, you know, that is funny. You did call her out because that's so true. You know, it was out in the media. Not long after that. I mean, you still hear things. Everybody's doing something a little sketchy, if you will. So... I don't know. Maybe we need our own Ashley Madison, Dr. Ruth show with Dr. Sarah and Noel. We'll bring the word out there.
Sounds good. We'll release one tidbit of information every day to help us on that roadmap to marriage. You know,
exactly.
It's funny. Like we released a book called First Bump, and people ask me, well, why'd you call it that? I said, well, it's the first bump in the road to being non-monogamous, and it turns out it's not a 7-year itch that most men experience. They tend to have affairs. Their first-time affair seeking, especially on Ashley Madison, tends to be 3 to 4 years into the marriage, and it's for a very pragmatic reason. You know, pre-pregnancy and pre-baby being born, your sex lives go 100 miles an hour. It's kind of where you want it and when you want it.
Right.
And all of a sudden now, it's transformed. It's transformed into a whole bunch of prohibitions around it, whether it's, you know, your partner feels physically different, there's a recovery time, you're just the demand of a child, an infant child. Those all change your sex life, and it turns out a ton of men are not adjusting well to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no blame being pointed here. No, I'm not saying this is women's fault.
No, it is kind of what it is.
I've been judged, but I'm just saying this is the objective data. So if you're in a marriage and you think you have 7 years before things can start to dry, you're mistaken. So at least be conscious of the facts. And with that knowledge, people might end up being more successful.
Absolutely. Now... You guys are expanding into different markets. Last time we talked, I think you were trying to expand into India and Turkey. How did that go?
Yeah, you know, our expansion has been, I call it two flows. You know, the four corners of the globe, you know, infidelity happens in every culture on the planet. There is no place on earth you can point me to where it doesn't happen. And so we've always known that we could export our product around the globe. But we also decided to expand into cultural corners. You know, in the Hindu arranged marriage world in India, in the Jewish world in Israel, in the Muslim world in Turkey. And so what we find there is infidelity does trump all. It trumps every single cultural nuance you can say to me. And I've heard this time and time again. Oh, we're different. We're conservative. We're this. All those facts might be true, but there's nobody in those countries that is prepared to live with a lack of intimacy. Think about it. In some of these countries in the world, there are prohibitions against it. They will stick you in jail or do worse to you if you do it, and yet people still do it.
Right.
If you ask most of your listeners right now to stop having sex for the rest of their lives, live lives of celibacy, almost none of them could succeed at doing that.
No.
So ultimately,
they couldn't go a month.
That's right. So you're actually willing to risk your freedom and in some cases your life for it. And so, yes, we have a very unique business model. We get to sell oxygen. We are selling a life force.
Mm-hmm.
We are letting you connect with somebody who's interested in the same amount of intimacy as you. And that's what's really powerful draw of Ashley Madison.
It's great. I mean, I love it. People might judge me for it, but I mean, it's realistic. Do you guys have anything new coming up for 2015 that you want to tell us about?
Well, yeah, you know, I also think that, you know, I always talk about the societal impact we have. A great example of it is, you know, we launched Ashley Mass into South Korea, one of those places where infidelity is illegal, you know,
yep.
but the communication about it on our platform is not illegal, but yet they shut us down. It was really disappointing. So we went to the courts and we said, you can't shut down a communication platform around infidelity. That's not even what the law says. And if you did shut us down, well, you better, you know, start looking at phone records. If lovers call themselves on Samsung phones, you better shut that down. You better shut down any email exchanges. So if you're using your Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
And so the court looked at it. They went to the Supreme Court and they said, you know what? This law doesn't have any place in society. So after 63 years of an adultery law in South Korea being present, they have now removed it as of last month.
Oh, really? Oh, that's excellent.
And mm-hmm. I'm flying over there, you know, next week to hold a press conference on it. And so I'm not just talking out of the sides of my mouth, but I really think the Ashley Madison and our size and our scope is transforming societies. It's making people think differently about it. And
right.
yes, it wasn't me alone. Every journalist with a brain in South Korea was writing. And so they were supportive of kind of our brief. But absent us coming to South Korea, absent us filing these lawsuits, I don't think that the law changes. And so
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping to get a bit of a hero's welcome, but we'll see.
I hope you have a lot of bodyguards.
I will for sure.
Please do, because we need to keep you around, definitely. You know, that's going to be interesting. I can't. Will that be in the press? Because I cannot wait to read about that. So.
It will be for sure. You know, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, every
wow.
magazine or periodical that kind of covers international stuff is interested in this aspect of the story for sure.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with that. Congratulations, because I knew that was a struggle for you when we talked a couple months ago. So that's awesome news for you guys. Do you guys have anything you want to say to our Boston listeners? If you ever need an advocate out here in Boston, I'm your girl.
No, we appreciate that. But, you know, I think it's funny. When we first launched into Massachusetts, I remember a lot of uproar. You know, this is
yep.
a really Roman Catholic state. The Archdiocese himself was trying to, like, ban our advertising.
You were on, what, WAAF? You had advertising with them?
And the whole point is, you can't stop people from having affairs. You can ban our advertising. You can even shut down the website. It's not going to stop, right? They're just going to find a new way to have it. And unfortunately,
yes.
it's probably going to rope in a more unsuspecting person, or it's going to happen in the workplace and their job. So I think as a society, let's all agree to take our heads out of the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a long look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, this happens to some of the most revered people in our society, the Bill Clintons, the JFKs, the people, the athletes we love, the entertainers we adore. This
happens.
Is really everybody. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it happens. Let's understand why it happens, and let's stop, you know,
running
our mouths around this narrative that, you know, it's got to be the end-all and be-all.
Right. I absolutely agree. It, you know, it's a stigma that we need to get over. So, all right. Well, thank you for joining me today. This is quite a talk.
Thanks.
Very informative. I always love talking to you, and maybe we should do a show.
Anytime.
We should chat.
Anytime.
All right.
I would love to. I can become a regular. I can. Well, we can have me on Monday mornings while we see the numbers spike up on Ashley.
Hey, I'd fly up there and do a show with you. I want to go in the Bill Clinton room. Actually, guys, he has a room. It's tongue-in-cheek. It's so funny. That was, like, my favorite picture. I tweeted that out. It's you sitting in your Bill Clinton room. Do you want to tell them about that real quick?
Yeah, you know, it was just while we were naming boardrooms in our office, we said, let the company decide who are, you know, your most inspired cheaters. And Clinton won hands down, you know. And
absolutely.
We, as an homage to him, kind
yep.
of, you know, our hero image is a anonymous married woman kind of whispering no eyes. And we did a Bill Clinton version of it. And every time someone walks into that Clinton room, I just see a big smile on their face. It's just, we all know the world's most famous philanderer. And I have to tell you,
mm-hmm.
if Hillary wins and becomes the next president of the United States, I think we're going to have to address the topic of infidelity differently, because here's a woman who overcame it in a sense.
She did.
Right? She didn't leave her husband,
mm-hmm.
has become the most powerful person on the planet. We're going to have to look at infidelity differently
right.
in the face of that, you know, that potential occurrence.
Right. I totally agree. And you know what? Maybe she should win, and then people start listening to us.
She should win, and I should definitely donate to her campaign.
I think you could. I could probably get $50 myself. So, all right, Noel, thanks for joining us today in the SAC Dirty Water News. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.